Luke chapter 21, if you have your Bibles with you. Reading the Gospels is pretty much an open window into the life and ministry of Christ. And while it doesn't record, I'm sure, every detail that of Jesus' life while he was on earth, it does give us a little bit of a window into what he did. And what that window tells us is that Jesus didn't miss an opportunity to teach from the happenings, the activities. He took what was taking place and used them for teaching moments. Parents, I think it's good for us to learn that, to teach our children through the occurrences and the happenings, teachable moments around us. Jesus did that over and over and over again. That may make it difficult for us to fully comprehend because our societies have changed, our cultures have changed, our thinking patterns have changed so much in advancement. We have a little bit difficult time understanding that those kinds of things that took place. This week, Stanley flew in an airplane for the first time, and he some people may not like it, but he had the opportunity to sit where he could look out over the wing, and he saw the activity of all of those panels and flaps on the wings, and it intrigued him. Ask him about it. Pretty incredible, you know, how fast they were flying and how high they were flying. All that stuff that was going on to make that thing great big jet, 200 and some people on it, fly comfortably through the air. Go back to that time and they wouldn't have a clue. Back to Bible days, they wouldn't have a clue anything about that kind of thing. And it's hard for us to grasp, even though history can teach us some things. All the things that are going on. But here in this passage, Jesus takes something very mundane. It's not big. It's not the great big wonderful advancements of airplanes that he's talking about. This is just mundane living here in this particular passage of Scripture, the first four verses of chapter 21 of Luke. I want us to look at it. I want us to notice what we can learn or what we learn from the widow's mite. Because Jesus is wanting us to learn something here. Otherwise, he wouldn't have given it. Luke wouldn't have put it in. Because there's other things that took place that's not included in the life of Christ in the records of the Gospels. But this is here. What do we learn from the widow's mite? Verse number one, and he looked up and saw the rich men casting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw also a certain poor widow casting in thither two mites. And he said, of a truth I say unto you, that this poor widow hath cast in more than they all. For all these have of their abundance cast in unto the offerings of God, but she of her penury have cast in all the living that she had. Suppose the first question that comes to mind, do we take this at face value? Are we to understand the King James translation here into our language to be accurate in its assessment of what was taking place? You say, well, why are you bringing that up, preacher? Well, look at it. He said, this poor widow hath cast in more than they all, because she has cast in all her living. All the living that she had. Didn't have welfare back then. Didn't have government assistance back then. Didn't have a social security check back then. What was it that she was living on? And then for her to take what she had and give it to this chest that had been built for them to put in their offerings. There's five lessons at least that we can learn from it. Let's take a look at them as quickly as we can this morning. The first lesson that I suppose that we could glean from this story that Jesus is trying to get across is sincerity. I kind of like the background of that word, sincerity. We're told that the word sincerity comes from the time when the Romans would do sculpting. And if there was some kind of a defect in their marble or whatever it was that they were working with, and probably it was the marble that they were working with, that if there was some kind of a defect that they were working with, that sometimes they would fill that defect or that flaw with some kind of a wax. And in doing so, they could deceive the person that was purchasing that. And so some work of art that they would accomplish and they would complete, and if it was without any flaw, the term was sincera, or without flaw. And from that, the word sincerity, without flaw. Without flaw. Could it be said that our worship is without flaw? Could it be said that our living is without flaw? Could it be said that our love for God is without flaw? Could it be said that our giving to God is without flaw? Could it be said that our motive is without flaw? What we find here is Jesus was taking this widow woman that was simply giving what she had in light of or in comparison to those that were pouring in larger sums and perhaps large sums of money in their wealth that she was pouring in from the sincerity of her heart, the flawlessness of her heart, the hunger of her heart, the worship of her heart, that it was driving her and motivating her to give everything that she had. Now, some people may try to go home from a service like this and be stuck on this particular point and think, oh, I can never measure up. So they want to throw in the towel because they're not measuring up and they don't plan to measure up by giving 100%. And I don't think that that's what God's wanting us to consider here. I think he's wanting us to consider the sincerity of her heart. She was a sincere giver. She was a worshiper. In the midst of false worship. The sincerity of her heart drove her to be a sincere worshiper in the midst of those that were not so sincere, but were casting it in with their righteous robes tightly wound about them and looking around to see who it was that could see them put in their worship, as it were. Let's just pause here for a moment. It's just us. And let's consider the thought for ourselves. Do we ever struggle, if I do that in church, so-and-so may see me and they... And so we don't because we don't want them thinking bad of us for doing it. Or we do it because we look at somebody else and say, oh, I might be able to gain some extra points here with them. You know, it goes both ways. But do we come to church and our sole focus, whether it's we're raising our hand in song service of testimony to the words that we're singing, or standing up and giving a verbal word of testimony of praise to God, or in giving in the offering, or in providing assistance in Sunday school class, or teaching in Sunday school class, or singing the special song, whatever it is that we are doing on any given Sunday or any given service, is it that our motive is sincere in worship to God and to God alone? If we can learn anything from the widow's mite, I hope that we can learn sincerity. The The second thing that we can notice here and learn from the widow's mite is self-sacrificing spirit. There's no need to spend a lot of time here because we've already pretty much covered the extent of what she was giving and what she gave. All her living. We're finding today in our generation more and more that people struggle with the thought of giving 10%. And within that 10%, quite often, they also include their offerings. So they keep track of all of the offerings and keep track of it so that it all adds up, perhaps adds up to 10%. She was self-sacrificing. Her spirit was such that she was willing to give. And you know, that's mind-boggling to me. I've already mentioned she didn't have government assistance. She didn't have anything else to help her along the way. I don't really know what it was that she was living on. Maybe there were some families that had, you know, banded together to help the widows and those that were alone like that. There was some kind of, but it wasn't Uncle Sam writing a check for her. But she gave. She gave because her heart was in to worshiping God. She wanted to be all in, not just a portion in. Self-sacrificing spirit. So we can learn from the widow's mite, self-sacrificing in spirit. Let's move on to the third one. We can learn from this parable or this story. It's not really a parable because it's happening right in front of them, what's taking place, and he's using that as a teachable moment. We find also, or we can learn also from this widow's mite, the story of the widow's mite, love and reverence for God's house. How many of you came to God's house this morning and knelt down outside before you came in and worshiped the building? Quiet. You know, we all have our different opinions. I personally, there's some things that are personal to me. Probably because of upbringing, probably because of my thinking, and it wasn't your upbringing, so it's not your thinking. But there's something about God's house. No, it's not an idol. No, it's not something that we come to church, and before we enter in, we bow down and pay obeisance to it, and we worship it in any way. There's no worship involved of the building itself. But there's something about it when I see somebody throwing a ball up against the outside of the building. I'm telling you, that's my upbringing. That's my thinking. And it may not be yours. But all I'm saying in that thought is it's how we reverence the house of God. And it may not be anything wrong with bouncing, but it's the house of God. And so I'm thinking throwing a ball up against its wall. There wasn't too many places to do too many things in Evansville. We lived in the city, had four city lots there on the property of the church area. Part of it was paved, so it was nice for the kids with their little scooters and their bicycles and whatnot, but really wasn't a whole lot of place to play ball as such. And so it was a temptation for the boys to go out and bounce the ball off of the building, off of the church wall, so that they could bounce the ball to themselves and catch the ball themselves. You know, it's just something about it. I had a hard time with that. It's like, boys, let's not do that. Let's not do that. That's still quiet. Sometimes that's good, isn't it? Love and reverence for the house of God. But let's go back to 2 Kings chapter 12. And we'll find in 2 Kings chapter 12 the inauguration of the treasury. Jehoiada the priest took a chest and bored a hole in the lid of it and set it beside the altar on the right side as one cometh into the house of the Lord. And the priest that kept the door put therein all the money that was brought into the house of the Lord. And so in that, and that's just one verse, but in that chapter it's describing the inauguration of the treasury. Then if we go over to Haggai chapter number 1, and we can see in Haggai chapter 1 that there was something taking place in the lives of the Israelites after, this is sometime after now, of that treasury inauguration, in the beginning of that treasury. Now there's some things that are taking place. And this is where we can probably find the beginning of the attitude that is found here in Luke. Though it may be a far cry from the actual happening here in Haggai, because in Haggai we're seeing that the treasury is being limited, that the giving is down, that it seems as though from what the prophet is writing, that the people are focusing solely on their own personal dwelling places and they have languished completely in the house of God. If you don't think that's a problem, then read that first chapter of Haggai, because in that chapter of Haggai it says, because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man unto his own house, therefore the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit, and I called for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon men, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands. Well, he must take in all of it. God is calling for a complete change in their income. He limits or minimizes or fires them all. Apparently, their job is gone. Everything that takes place, the farmer, the one that is laboring with his hands in some way, it's all gone. God fires them all. Why? Why does he fire them? We could probably get down to the convicting point and say, well, it's because they have plush carpet in their homes and we have old carpet in the church. No, that's not what he's saying. It's not what he's saying. I believe that what he is saying is that their love and reverence for the house of God has languished. They are more focused on their personal lives than loving and reverencing God and his house. How do we reverence God's house? I appreciate it. Some of you families, some of you parents are very, very strong with your children when it comes to this candy thing that seems to be prevalent in churches. You know, every kid has to have candy. Every teacher has to give candy. And so many of them, I see them, they are rushing to get outside because they want that candy because they're not supposed to have it in the sanctuary or in the church. I like that. There's something about these walls, though we don't worship them, though we don't bow down and pay homage to them, there is something about these walls that have been sanctified, this building that has been sanctified as the house of God, and being the house of God, there is love and reverence to it, for it, and in it. I believe that that's one thing that we can learn from the widow's mite. She was wanting to give because her heart was full of love and reverence for the house of God. The fourth thing we can find in the story of the widow's mite and learn from it is faith in God. One of the hardest songs that we sing in our hymnals probably is that song, Living by Faith. Because there's not a single one of us here that truly lives like by faith as this woman must have lived. If we want an extra dollar, we can go find an extra dollar somewhere by working for it. Some of you have the opportunity to work in an overtime here or there through the week, and by doing so, increase your income a little bit. There's a lot of things that we can do. All of us can do. Kid in at the school messaged me the other day and wanted me to give him a tree stand. I said, I use all of mine. I mean, I want to use all of mine. Maybe that should have been more accurate. I wanted to tell the kid, get a job. I don't have any money. Get a job. That's how you get money. Faith in God. Faith in God. Now, you know, we think about faith in God as faith for salvation, faith for grace, that sort of thing. But faith in God, that He supplies all of our needs. She didn't have a husband to give her, provide her a livelihood. It doesn't tell us anything about children, having children to provide for her. It says that there is a widow. A certain poor widow. Her husband's life insurance didn't come through. She was a poor widow. But somewhere in this story, it should come out to us that she had a confidence in the God that she served, in the God of the Israelites, though that the people around her, those that were surrounding her, even at that very moment, all of those rich people pouring in of their wealth, those people had no clue about the God that she worshiped. Because the God that she worshiped was a God that provided and a God that was worthy of her faithful service and a God that was trustworthy to provide her needs. Apparently, because she gave all. She was trusting. Faith in God. Finally, we can find and learn from the story of the Samaritan, or the Samaritan, the widow's mite. Gratitude. So I don't see gratitude in here. We could probably read those four verses repeatedly, and you'd come up with the idea that, where do you see gratitude? Well, let's look at it from the earthly standpoint and from the viewpoint that you and I may have. Was she bitter? Was she angry? Quite often, and listen to me, quite often bereavement causes bitterness. Quite often bereavement brings anger. Quite often when we are crushed in our feelings, that crushing of our feelings affects our faith. And if it affects our faith, it affects our love. And if it affects our faith and our love, it affects our gratitude. But we find it here that she is not affected by the losses of her life. She is still willing to give. She's sincere. She's self-sacrificing. She loves and reverences God's house. She has faith in God. I can't help but believe that there's gratitude in the bottom of this. Can you see what I'm saying? The Pharisee and his kind, they were looking for the praise of man. She was looking for the applause of heaven. How do we express our gratitude? Do we share our faith as a form of sharing gratitude? Do we live in such a way that our lives are thankful and grateful, praising God, so that every breath that we take brings Him honor and glory and gratitude? There are some things that we can learn from the widow's mite. Let's take them home with us this morning. Let's stand together.